First Palm Media. You are listening to Mushing on First Palm Media. Visit our website at mushing.com.
Hello and welcome everybody to Mushing. This is Robert and I am joined today by Deb Glenn. She is the Director of Development of the Leonard Sepla House Project up in Nome, Alaska. And she just came on board, and this is an exciting time if you know anything about the history of mushing. Deb, how's it going today?
You know, it's awesome. I'm here in the lower 48 right now. I'm scheduled to go to Nome in 2 weeks and really kick this project off. But we've had a lot of rain, but it's a gorgeous day today.
It is a beautiful beautiful spring day up here in Alaska. Chores are churning and dogs are getting fat and happy in the dog yard. So it is a beautiful time up here as well. Before we jump into some questions, Deb, can you do us a quick, tell us who you are and what you're all about, please.
Oh, gosh. Well, where do I start? In Nome, I guess, where it all began. It was back in 2004. My mother, my daughter, and myself decided we were going to go to Nome and watch the end of the Iditarod. I couldn't really conceptualize what that really was. I had heard about it, and I thought, boy, it'd be cool if I could somehow get on the trail and see them doing this. But we had a longtime friend that lived up in Nome, and we went, and it was in the middle of the night. A spotter was on the mining dredge, and we heard all the noise that the winner was spotted on the seacoast and was coming in. That was Mitch Seedy that year. And so we threw on our mucklucks, went out, and it was a Shakespearean experience for me, really. The eyes say what the lips fear to speak. The mushers came in. I looked into Mitch's eyes and the eyes of all of his dogs, and I thought, man, where have you been? And wherever you've been, I got to go there. So at the headquarters in Nome, Dan Seavey, you know, those legends, and Dick Mackey, they were sitting around waiting for their second-generation sons to come in. And I started networking with them. It's like, what are you doing, Deb? Well, and they probably thought, who is this woman? We'll never hear from her again. There's groupies up in Nome, and they get so excited. It's such a thrilling time that, you know, how do you become a musher? But so I went back to Wisconsin, and I was working on my novel, and I had this little card on my desk. One side was Dan Seavey's contact information. The other side was Dick Mackey's. And one day I knew if I touched that card, it was going to change my life forever. And so I did one of those loves me, loves me not thing. I turned the card over, boom. I called Dick Mackey, and he introduced me to John Barron, who he was one of the early mushers, and I did a rod, ran several times. And so the first 2 years, I sold my business and I left the city to live in a cabin with a bobcat. But anyway, my husband of 40 years, he understood, but my kids tell the story that I replaced him with 60 sled dogs. So I guess that's kind of true. But I leased a team from John Barron for the first 2 years and did all my qualifiers to qualify to run the Iditarod. And I mean, I could tell a funny aside. You know us mushers. You want to hear a funny story from up on the mountain?
Let's do it.
Okay. Well, anyway, the Barons invited me over for dinner one night, and there was a decapitated mountain goat's head by the cabin door. And so he literally gave me heads up for what was for dinner. I think that's funny.
That is funny. So with this trip to Nome, obviously that kicked off your mushing career, and you attempted to do Iditarod a couple of times, and I think that's a mm-hmm. very important part of this story. When did you do those attempts?
So 2006 and 2009. So if that tells you anything about my failure to come under the Burled Arch. Life happens, but sometimes difficult challenges come in people's lives to break trail for some of life's greatest joys. And what happened after my two unsuccessful attempts to finish the Iditarod. I wrote a series of character education books based on the antics of sled dogs within the healing lure of nature. And I went coast to coast telling people about our sport, encouraging children. I'd fill auditoriums with these kids, and they just screamed to learn. And then later, after COVID hit, I felt led to write a full-length animated feature film. And now the Disney artist who designed characters for The Lion King, Beauty and the Beast of Milan and stuff, he has animated my characters, and we're making a movie. So, you know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer or an Indian chief or anything like that. I'm a musher. And, you know, no matter how much money you have when you start getting into mushing, you're very poor at the end, but you're musher rich, and only mushers could truly understand that. Yeah.
And that it, that's a great segue into this. When you talk about being quote unquote musher rich, a lot of that time, a lot of that means tradition. And I think that that's an important part of this story. Obviously why I wanted to have you on. You reached out to us a couple of weeks ago or so, because you fell into a new position. And I think that this is one of the coolest things that we've talked about in a long time. You are now part of the Leonard Sepulveda House project. And I remember several years ago, there was a lot of talk about having this restored and, you know, redeveloped as part of the museum up there and whatnot. But then that sort of fell by the wayside. And I found out from you just last week that that house was now moved from the city of Nome, and it's now sitting in the city dump. Is that correct?
It sure is. Yep. I'm a strong believer in when something great is about to happen, it's all about timing. And it didn't happen before because it wasn't the right time. Imagine now we're looking, oh, I'm getting chills just thinking about it. It's the 100th anniversary of the serum run. I mean, imagine that. And we'll have mushers coming in that can deliver some serum to Leonard's actual house. Suffice to say, Ertha Lenhar, who's the founder of the Leonard Sepulveda House Project, he reached out to me. And the notion to preserve that part of history just grabbed my heart like no other. And we've got to get this done.
So before we jump into what your guys' plan is, can you describe that as best as you possibly can? Of course, being on the podcast or on the radio, it's difficult to tell that visual picture. But what does this house look like? How big is it? What is it made out of? Give us a flair if you can.
Oh, my gosh. How do I describe what's now a very weathered house that once was never that much to look at anyway? It's interesting historic weathered boards that form a rectangle with a couple of outcroppings, if you will. And the where the windows were is boarded up. And the city has put a cable around it to hold the integrity. So it needs a firm foundation. It needs restoration, renovation, and it's going to be awesome.
And I've been to Nome several times, and I'm very familiar with sort of the architecture of the village and of the city, I guess you would be, and just sort of how it's laid out. And for a lot of people who've never seen pictures of this city, it's not what a lot of people expect. Of course, most people, when they see, especially even in the sled dog world, when they see the pictures of Nome, often they just see the finish line of Iditarod with the arch and all of that. But it's a very unique architecture for being where it is, isn't it?
It really is. I was shocked, actually, when the first time that I went to Nome. I've been there about four times. A lot of houses up on permafrost, houses built right there on the Bering Sea coast. a few special church steeples. One of the oldest Russian Orthodox churches is there, for instance. Some interesting topography, but essentially you've got 80 miles of roads that lead essentially to nowhere. So there's an airport and a grocery store and a couple hotels. So.
And that's about it. And there are absolutely no trees. Of course, it's above the Arctic Circle there, so not a whole lot of any substance, if you will, grows, meaning trees and that sort of thing. So it's relatively flat, almost barren looking, if you will. It's got its own very unique beauty right there on the Bering Sea. And of course, that is sort of the homage to a lot of to us in the sport of dog mushing. So one last question about the house, at least historically. When did Leonard Seppala live there? And when did he move on?
What I remember reading was that he was actually brought to Nome in the early days by the three Swedes. I don't know if you guys have ever heard about that. It's kind of funny. They weren't all Swedish. But anyway, they had gone to Nome and they found gold near Anvil Mountain. So they told Leonard about it and he went up there. He arrived in 1900. And that's where he had his first exposure to sled dogs. So, and of course, the sled dogs are the ones that help bring gold and mail and provisions in and out. And, well, men, too, actually. And, well, those special ladies, if you know what I mean. But, yeah, Leonard concentrated on his dogs, though, and especially the Siberian breeds. And so he started to run them. He ran in the Alaska Sweepstakes, and his leaders are famous. I mean, who in the mushing world hasn't, or practically now with film and everything, Togo, Balto, Fritz, yeah. So, I think he was there. It's in the Library of Congress. His house has been registered, and that was in 1936. But to back up just a little bit, in 1925, an outbreak of diphtheria happened in Nome. And the life-saving serum had to get, well, from Seattle, where it was produced by the Merck Company, all the way up to Nome. You know, how do you do that? There's no road. So, ship from Seattle to Seward, rail from Seward to Nenana. But it was the dog teams and their mushers who risked their lives to drive the serum by dog sled from Nenana to Nome. So that's what we now refer to as the serum run. And like I mentioned before, this year is the 100th anniversary of the serum run, whose paw steps will be retraced by two groups of mushers running about a month apart, starting in January and ending in March. Jonathan Hayes, he's going to run the Poland Spring Siberians. They're all direct descendants of Togo and the Leonard Seppala sled dog team, and he's going to run with the polar explorer Eric Nelson. Hayes is a former Marine. He's an ordained minister, writer, musher. He's president of, well, I think this is really cool. He's president of the International Seppala Siberian Sled Dog Club. So how cool is that going to be? And then the other group is our very own Speaking to the Devil right now, Mushing Magazine co-founder and sponsor of this podcast, Robert Forto. And he's going to be working in tandem, tell me if I'm this right, with the university where you actually teach mushing, right?
Yes, that is the case. And you know what, Deb, this is the first formal announcement, I believe, for our expedition. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Woohoo! I have chills again. Honestly, I just can hardly take all of this in and fathom. I'm just so thrilled. I can't stand it. Yeah. So starting this month, in about 2 weeks, a group of us who have in common a love of history, sled dogs, and the medical aspect of the serum run, just a compilation of volunteers who make up the Leonard Seppala House Project. We're a 501c3, and we're going to move the house, renovate it, and restore it. So it's just tremendously exciting.
It is very exciting. And a little bit about the work on the project itself. As we mentioned at the top of the show, currently the house was moved from town to the city dump. Yes, the actual dump. They were thinking back then, there's nothing that of any historical relevance to this, I think we ought to just throw it away. And it was moved out there. And of course, your organization, and I'm sure a handful of others, said, hold up, wait, we have something planned for this to really revive that. And I want to talk about that in just a second. But when we tell the story of Leonard Seppala, as you mentioned, he came over to Nome, started running sled dogs, and of course, the Serum Run, and then a postscript story well after that, coming to New England and racing there, and you know, the Siberian Husky and all that comes along with that. But I remember you saying here in the episode that that you were working with an animator with ties to Disney, and I was thinking as you were telling the Seppala story, Deb, about the movie that came out several years ago called Togo, and it's on Disney Plus right now, and of course, it does what Disney does best, and really shares the story in their own light. But if you can recall, do you remember the house that they portrayed Leonard Seppala living in with his pack of dogs? It was not what is in reality, is it?
No, not really. There are some things in common, to be sure. You talked about the barrenness of Nome, and there was a lot of that. But I don't recall with specificity paying much attention to the house. Per se, I was so enthralled with the movie itself. I'll tell you, listeners, if you haven't watched Togo, you really need to watch Togo. It'll change your life. Changed mine anyway.
It will for sure. And after we talk, I'm definitely going to watch that again and pull up that scene from the movie and try to compare and contrast. I love doing that. I love that behind the scenes stuff from Hollywood for sure. So Deb, here we are. You just recently came on board to this and are working feverishly to start this project and get it off the ground. And when we spoke well before the interview, said that obviously one of the first things is to get it off of its current location and moved over back into town, and it's going to be part of the museum up there. Can you tell us quickly that story about the beginning stages of getting it moved and, of course, starting the renovations?
Absolutely. So it didn't surprise me when I started to really get into the history of Nome and so forth that the house would have been extracted out of the ground and moved out to the dump. I don't know if it's the lazy, hazy days of summer when people a lot of times don't have as much to do, but there's a lot of houses that have been moved out to the dump from Nome, the famous dollhouse and a saloon and this, that, and the other thing. I just found that funny. But as far as the work we've got ahead of us, it's a daunting task. I had to make arrangements for people in Nome to have the equipment and the manpower to actually move the house and secure it to a foundation. I called Lowe's and Anchorage, and I had to put together a lumber package and have them get all the prices, and then it had to be approved by the board of directors. We had to fundraise and get the money to be able to pay for all this stuff, and then it's going to go by air. So Jonathan Hayes, the musher that's going to do the first Serum Run into Nome, he's going to arrive with some contractors, and they're going to work like heck and get this project done. Once we have a ribbon cutting ceremony, once the house is complete, we will have an official party, and it's going to be catered, and we're going to give the finished Leonard Seppala house to the museum and the city of Nome.
So, Deb, I'm looking at your guys' website right now, and on the front page there is a picture of the house, and you were describing it a little bit early on, and it's a relatively small place, kind of a light bluish color. Like you said, it's all boarded up, not your typical dog mushing kennel house, if you will. It is relatively inconspicuous, if you say so. Do you know, I know we're going a little bit backwards, but do you know if he held dogs here or was that somewhere else?
He did have dogs with that house. Again, there's so much that we can talk about as to how he lived his life and how he ran his dogs and how it was that he knew some of the people that ultimately got involved in Iditarod and, well, the descendants. The stories just go on and on. That's pretty much what I'd say about that. They just do. There's so many books out there. And
for sure. We could definitely talk for hours here on this podcast about that and go down all of the rabbit holes. But this is the house. And if you guys go to the website, LeonardSeplahouseProject.com, and we're going to make sure that we link that up on the show notes page, you can see pictures of the house and what it looked like before. And you even have some rendered drawings about what your plans are to do afterwards. So once you guys get it moved and refurbished and all of that, where is it going to be located?
It's going to be right next to the Terry Museum in Nome right now, and they're going to run it and manage it into perpetuity. We're also, I'm going to found a historical society in Eartha Lenhar's name, and so that we can continue to find artifacts, collect artifacts, and do what we can to keep the history of Nome, Alaska, and its surrounding areas alive in the hearts and minds of others. You know, I was thinking when 9/11 happened, for instance, it was a time our nation came together like no other, and no one does it quite like us. And right now we've got the opportunity to celebrate when science and humanity came together to save lives. You know, the drive and the spirit of the sled dogs and their mushers, it just to make all this happen. It's right now. It's happening in real time, the 100th anniversary of the serum run. It's just remarkable, and people are coming together like no other. Gosh, please consider joining our team to help. I think upon a word spoken at Nelson Mandela's funeral, the word is Ubuntu, and it means I am because you are. Let's do this together. It's an invitation.
Yes.
Go to the website.
Yes.
Have some fun.
Yeah, there is definitely a donate button, and we will also share that as well. So let's talk a little bit about the project while we have just a few minutes here. I believe you had said in our pre-interview that you're expecting this to be about $100,000. At least that's your budget. Is that correct, or am I misspeaking there?
Well, right now we're focusing on $30,000 to finish the preliminary work. We're going to be in discussions with the city as to how much more they want to see done on the infrastructure of the house. I mean, it's going to be drywalled, it's going to have electricity, but whether or not they want it to have plumbing and some of those specificities. And there's going to be a lot of people that are currently spending money out of their pocket for housing. I mean, I think I'm probably going to end up sleeping in a tent up there when I go. I just haven't even had the time to check into the bed and breakfast up there, but it's really so expensive, as everybody knows. Back in 2004, I remember I wanted to make a stew, and for some of the people up there, I went to the grocery store. There was one head of cabbage, and it cost me $8. So it's very feasible that depending on how things move forward, that we could spend upwards of $100,000. But right now we can complete the job with the money we have raised to date.
So Deb, when you guys are completed, and you know, it's all said and done, I'm sure a lot of our listeners have been to these types of houses or landmarks, if you will. They go to these museums and they, you know, they walk through and they see what's happening. What are your guys' plans after it's done? Are you going to set up the furniture and all that sort of stuff like you typically see in these types of places? Or is it just going to be the structure restored? What's the sort of long-term vision, if you will?
Oh, you bet. And that's one of the things that I'm glad you brought that up, because I didn't do a very good job in trying to account for why we want to continue to fundraise. But one of the things, there's an old picture of Leonard, and he was stoking a fireplace. He's putting a log in it, and it's kind of an iconic picture. And so we'd like to recreate that fireplace and have that picture preserved and put in there. And then if we can afford it, have some sort of wax image maybe made of Leonard in the exact position he is in the picture and putting a log into the fireplace. I, for one, would love to see Togo come home. He's at, if memory serves me, and I have a lot of research to do. I mean, folks, I've been on this project for just a little over a week and a half, so I have a lot of catching up to do. But when I was at the Iditarod Museum, I think Togo is there. So I'm not sure if ITC will be willing to let Togo come home, but imagine the thrill of that. I guess this is how I'd like to leave it is we would love to gather relevant artifacts. If you've got a heart for philanthropy or you have anything related to Leonard Sepla, Sled Dogs, the Serum Run, Nome, Alaska, and are willing to part with it, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and just to confirm there, Deb, yes, Togo is at the Iditarod headquarters right there in Wasilla. And if you are traveling to Alaska, it is definitely worth the time to visit that place. It is a very cool shop, a gift shop, and a little museum there off to the left with all the trophies and stuff. But tucked sort of in the back of the museum there is the stuffed, if you will, dog Togo. And he's been there for many years, at least as far back as I can remember. And just sort of an ancillary note, Balto is memorialized in a statue in New York City Central Park. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that he is also preserved at a museum in Cleveland. Am I right on that, Deb?
I think that's true. And don't forget Bill Devine's bronze statue at the start of Iditarod on 4th Avenue. Balto, he's got his paw heading north to Alaska.
Right.
The interior home. So, yeah.
Yeah, there are just so many stories about these people and dog heroes that really shaped the sort of the fabric of this sport. And you know, we've talked about it obviously for 14 years here on our podcast, and I'm sure that there is so much to do as well. So, Deborah, in order to end this, what are your plans? Obviously, you're sort of the director of development. Are you a boots on the ground type lady? Are you going to go out there swinging hammers, or are you, you know, behind the keyboard? What's your role in this whole thing?
Well, I have a very eclectic background, and I'll continue to do that. So it wouldn't be unusual to see me with a tool belt on, or, well, on a podcast like this, or talking to city councilman. It's just going to take wearing a few different hats to get the job done, I think. Yeah.
You know, politics aside, but I'm seeing Jimmy Carter and the Habitat for Humanity out there, you know, where he's out there with his wife. And these were, you know, way back in the day where he would go out and you know, swing hammers and build houses, and of course do all the PR and all of that. I'm sure you have a very close vision of that for yourself as well. Is that right?
Well, I do, but I'll tell you what would make a little dream come true for me: if the Nome Kennel Club would somehow help me get together a team of 8 dogs. Jonathan Hayes has told me he will give me a Leonard Sepla Siberian and fly it to Nome, and I'd like to put that dog in lead. He's 10 years old, and he's due to retire. I'd like to drive in to meet the mushers coming in and then escort him into town.
That would
I
be
broke my leg.
Yes, that would be nice for sure. So, Deb, how should we end this? We're going to give some websites and stuff on the show notes. How can folks follow you and your journey? Is it there on the website? Are you guys active on social? What's the best place for people to learn more?
Well, right now the website and my personal email address that I'm willing to give out, it's DannyGlennVentures@gmail.com to get in touch with me. But we're just now getting our media group together. I understand that there's a documentary being made, and so there will be videographers and photographers right from the get-go, and I'm sure social media and being able to follow this project and the 100th anniversary of the serum run is going to become very active in the near future.
I know that Iditarod and the CEO over there, Rob Urbach, has announced that, of course, they're going to commemorate this in some way as well with next year's Iditarod. They have to build a new Burled Arch. The Burled Arch pretty much disintegrated early this spring, and one of the Mushers, Ramey Smith, is going to be building a new Burled Arch for next year's Iditarod. It's an exciting time in the dog mushing world, not only for the Serum Run and the Leonard Sepala House and Iditarod and all that it goes with. It is truly a centennial celebration, isn't it?
It truly is. And when you think back in history at the advent of the railroads and how and snowmobiles, how the sled dogs came very close to becoming extinct. And we need to keep this sport alive and well. It just needed in the soul.
It is for sure. Well, Deb Glenn is our guest today. Exciting times, exciting things happening. I am so glad that we were able to connect. I look forward to staying in touch with you and not only following your journey along the way with all the work that you're doing there, but hopefully we can work some things out and really make this a special event, at least from our side of the media perspective, and go from there. Deb, it was a pleasure having you on. Take care, okay?
Okay, good luck on your journey, because you're going to be running too, and thank you so much for this time. Thank you.
Thank you. And on behalf of my guest today, this is Robert for Mushing. We will see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.